When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to First Class Fantasy. I'm Theo Greminger, and I'm joined by my co-host, Billy Muzio. And then I believe this is our guest, John Daigle's third appearance on First Class Fantasy. We're in year one for First Class Fantasy. John's been incredibly generous with his time and his takes here on First Class Fantasy. We're so excited to get John to join us in the NFL playoffs. I think I've podcasted with John with playoff content now for like four straight years. It's always a blast because you're one of the sharpest people around, John, and anybody who follows is on fantasy Twitter or reads fantasy football content or consumes it via podcast knows who you are. How are you doing? How's this time of year treating you, John?
Doing well. I think anyone that follows along knows right now that I am in between jobs and I'm doing great. Don't worry about me. Everything will be settled. I'm guessing around the Super Bowl, probably after, but I'm enjoying the free time. I'm enjoying four games, which makes the write-ups and just the notes I take more in depth. It's much easier to parse through defensive injuries when all 32 teams aren't playing. Everything's going well. I wish I would have been on last week for sure, because I was a very big proponent in DFS, for example, which is pretty much the same thing because you have to analyze the first matchups and then fill out the bracket from there. And not only did I get to Bucks money line, underdogs, I had them covering 4 of 5. I missed out on the Steelers plus 10 points. And I did have a couple Najee lineups out there, unfortunately. But I was very, very big on Texans defense and Puka over Kyren. Kyren seemed like a very big trap, especially since the Rams could have been a one-and-done team. I thought they were 50-50 to get through. So, yeah, I wish I could have joined last week to talk about all this with y'all.
Yeah, no, and Billy, I'll say that last week's guest, Andrew Cooper, is still a little bit upset that you missed last week, and now he sees you in the mix here with John. So shout out to you, Coop. Nothing personal, but Billy, you know, he's got things
great Coop.
And Billy, you know, let's talk about Puka Nacua, because Puka went absolutely bonkers. A couple weeks back, we did our first 2024 draft show of the year. You selected Puka Nacua, I believe, 10th overall.
I mean,
you certainly looked pretty good in week one. Was he the biggest standout for you in the first round of the fantasy football play in the first round of the NFL playoffs?
Yeah, I think one of them, but I definitely think first round, probably him and Aaron Jones, I think, are the two that need to be mentioned. And I do think that Puka is going to have a bright future ahead of him. Some quarterback uncertainty is going to be the main contributing factor to his ADP and I think in 2024. But ultimately, I like what he was able to do. I mean, who doesn't, right? Broke multiple records this year. Looks like he's going to have a bright future.
Yeah, and we're going to talk a little bit more about Jordan Love, the Green Bay Packers, and what went down in Dallas a little later on in the show. But John, we've been asking pretty much every guest throughout the season, you know, you put so much time and energy into your process during the summer, and then you have now the whole season in the rear view for the 2023 fantasy football season. Which player was sort of the biggest disappointment for you? Maybe a guy that you were bullish on or your former site 4for4 was bullish on that really kind of let you down with their performance or simply their usage?
I can be transparent because I even go back around this time of the year when I'm sorting through end of season metrics and look at my top fades and targets article. And a lot of it is not just players. It's the entire process of drafting is baked in, as anyone should do. Like, for instance, Rashad White was a top target. He finishes the RB14 in points per game. And it wasn't even about the player. It was more about the skipping the dead zone of running backs from rounds 3 through 7. And because we all thought, well, we thought Damian Pierce, Cam Akers, Alexander Mattison, the list goes on. Those guys just didn't fit in the buckets of players we should target in that range. They didn't have the ceiling, and that was all true. The one guy I missed in that tier, though, I included him in the tier, was Travis Etienne. And I honestly don't even feel bad about it because for the second half of the season, he was terrible. And if you put their usage side by side, Travis Etienne was Jacksonville Tony Pollard. He just happened to fall forward for touchdowns, and Tony Pollard did not. So, but nonetheless, he still finishes the RB6 in points per game. So definitely as a third-round player, a miss on my part for sure. And the receiver was Mike Evans. And I don't even hate it, honestly. You know, you look at all the touchdown rates from last year, everything they did through the air, and we have to scale it all back because it was a Tom Brady-led offense. I just thought in general the entire offense would regress under Todd Bowles without Brady with Baker Mayfield. Maybe the target tree gets condensed to one or two players. But Evans to have a nuclear contract year certainly was not on my radar. I came in underweight on in every single tournament, every single league, every single best ball team with him, and it definitely did not help these last few weeks. So those definitely were my two biggest misses personally.
And how about on the flip side, you know, besides Puka Nacua, who was a player where you were either bullish on or just simply impressed by their performance? Sort of your biggest positive fantasy surprise in 2023?
Kyren Williams was one of the biggest. I was pushing Puka. I was pushing Jaden Reed. I like those two individuals just based on their draft capital and their college profiles. I still think Kyren Williams, though, not even mine personally, but overall, was definitely the biggest surprise for everyone because it didn't pop till late either. I think it was end of July, mid-August, whenever Jordan Rodriguez first put out the siren that he was being used at camp as more of their like running back one. And so much so that a lot of casual drafters that, you know, we all cater to, they did not even draft him in the last round. Some of them did get him in the very last round, but that's where he was really around mid to late August. And then it came down to the waiver wire, and I know we're so far removed from it, everyone forgets that week one waiver wire. And Theo, you write it for Player Profiler.
Yeah.
It was actually a big discussion between, again, it seems crazy now, but it was Kyren Williams, Justice Hill, and Josh Kelly. And Kyren Williams is very clearly the number one player, and a lot of people went different directions. I believe you and I both had him number one. Oh, actually, I should say no. I had Puka number one, and then I had Kyren number two. But Kyren definitely is the number one running back that week. And so that to me was quite literally the biggest surprise, not only to finish as the RB2 in points per game, but just in general to be literally an every down back with pass catching chops. That target share did go away over the last month of the season as a lot more players became, or I shouldn't say a lot more players, as DeMarcus Robinson entered their lineup as a full-time player over Tutu Atwell, and they started using him more like Odell Beckham during the Super Bowl run, where he was a red zone threat as a big body guy that could separate. That's when Kyren's target share went away entirely. But as long as they don't add anyone of significant draft value, we've already seen how they value Zach Evans personally as more of a special teams player. So I would think Kyren returns as yet again an every down running back one under McVay.
Now, let me ask you this, because Billy and you are both excellent rankers and excellent in your process. And I've heard Billy's thoughts on this a little bit when it comes to Kyren Williams, but we'll start out with you, John, and then Billy, please add your thoughts. Right now, you're seeing the early drafting. You're going to have FFPC best balls this weekend. A couple other high-stakes formats are having their best balls. And Billy will be drafting in a best ball before you know it. I'm going to drag you right into the best ball streets, my man. And then you also have the Dynasty community. And I think both sides are looking at Kyren Williams. And I think that there's very, very strong opinions on one side or another. Matt Kelly, the podfather, is ready to sell Kyren Williams off in Dynasty. Alan Soslowski and I pushed back pretty hard on that one. Then we did our initial draft where Billy, Josh, and I all decided Kyren belongs right around that 1-2 turn. But like you said, John, you bring up other players landing in Los Angeles. So there's not exactly the biggest sense of confidence I feel from you on Kyren moving forward. Correct me if I'm wrong here. In Dynasty, are you selling Kyren Williams? And in redraft, do you remain kind of bullish, or do you have a little trepidation in the back of your head?
In these early drafts, I will not be hesitant to value Kyren around that range as a top. Again, I haven't done this just yet. Unlike a lot of people, like y'all are grinding your asses off, I usually step back, especially when you're unemployed. But I step back anyways around this time of the year, and I'm still evaluating game by games and through the Super Bowl. And then I'll take a couple weeks off, and then I'll jump right back into it just to get some kind of refresher here because the season of the year is so long. But right now, I would still assume Kyren Williams is top three, top four running back. I don't think the Rams would add anyone of significance personally. If they do, that's clearly a bad thing. But I don't think they're going to do that, especially since Sean McVay, whether it's Todd Gurley, CJ Anderson, Cam Akers, the list goes on, has a history of using only one running back. This goes back his entire tenure with Los Angeles. So I personally am very bullish on Kyren Williams.
Anything to add, Billy, in your evaluation with Kyren? Is this really a situation versus talent evaluation for you, Billy, or a little bit of both?
I think a little bit of both. I don't think you can just look at this from a one-way perspective. The thing that I think might hinder him in 2024 is just his overall size. You know, 5'9", 194 pounds, a little bit on the lighter and smaller side. Has been successful, but we also have seen some injuries mount in his short career. So I could see a scenario where they add a back in the draft. Any competition for touches is still touch competition, which would, limit his upside. But to Daigle's point, they do have a history of using one back. That being said, they do have a history of also switching backs. And so if we did see an injury that could potentially occur and they spent any draft capital on a running back inside the 2024 draft, we could see a transition or a potential shift of the guard just based upon they have no real draft capital in Kyren either. So although I like his skill set, I think he's been a good fit for the offense. I think he's done well. There's really nothing that ties them to him other than the success that he's had if they did, you know, have any way or stray away from him in at all in 2024.
Yeah, I'll say for me, the one thing that like unknown upside with Kyren, I agree, like the touches are kind of unsustainable. I don't think he's like an 18 carry a game guy, but I do think that the receiving upside could be there. I think he could see more targets and I think he could see more work in the passing game, in essentially his second full year in the league. So I don't know. He's definitely one of the big storylines of the offseason. And another storyline of the offseason, and we'll start with John on this one, is, John, you're in Chicago, and there's probably the two most polarizing opposites, extremes, of offensive coordinators were both interviewed recently by the Bears. You had Greg Roman, who became sort of a fantasy football villain his final season in Baltimore with the pace of the offense, sort of like the old school run-heavy approach with the Baltimore Ravens. He had a lot of success over the years. We had a QB1 season with Lamar Jackson under Roman, but you know, a pretty poor taste in the mouth of a lot of fantasy managers. Then you get Cliff Kingsbury, who runs almost an opposite offense of Greg Roman. I believe Arizona led the NFL in plays per game Cliff Kingsbury's last year in Arizona. And when you think Cliff Kingsbury, you think very, very small wide receivers and low A-dot throws. Does this mean to you, John, that the Bears are preparing for two scenarios here with Justin Fields? How are we supposed to read this?
I don't think they know what they're going to do yet. That's the issue. I liken it to Kyle Shanahan, and I know some people swear he knew what they're going to do the entire time in trading for the number three overall pick. I don't believe that for a second. I thought their entire process was to get in position for a quarterback and then do the details from there. And it led them to Trey Lance for better or worse. I think the Bears are just doing their due diligence and rightfully so. The fans, speaking from that perspective, definitely want Justin Fields. They've come around to the idea that not only is he a Chicago guy who they want to like hone in and raise and like win with him, and that's fine. Justin Fields is an amazing individual personally. And also like we have seen his ceiling. But I just think they genuinely want to keep that pick and turn into either more defensive players or Marvin Harrison Jr., because obviously the Bears need another receiver no matter what happens here. But honestly, I always lean towards the organizational side. It's just better practice to take the rookie quarterback, first of all, especially if we do think it's someone who, like Trevor Lawrence, who was touched by the hand of whatever God exists in football, then you obviously take that player. But for me, it's also about the fact that Justin Fields, although he did improve dramatically against the blitz this year, going back to Ohio State, that's also what he struggled with. Whenever you sent an extra rusher at him, he still was the same player when asked to process plays from a clean pocket. 8 touchdowns, for instance, this entire year from a clean pocket, which for reference, Mac Jones had 7. Tommy DeVito had 6 from a clean pocket. Not great. Also 6 picks as well. So whenever the play broke down and he had to operate out of the pocket, which is what we saw, for instance, from Tua struggling to do that. You have to be able to do that. Jared Goff, Tua cannot do that. Justin Fields has shown he can do that. That, to me, still makes you a top 12 quarterback in the league. But that's not something that you're afraid to get away from, honestly, because he's still struggling with that department. So, to me, I think it's pretty clear you should get away from him. But again, I don't think they know what they're doing just yet.
Billy, Justin Fields also is 10-28 as a starter. And that's certainly not all on him. But as we see with guys like C.J. Stroud, certain quarterbacks seem to elevate the team more so than others. I think Justin Fields, I think we have like fantasy football takes on him, and then we have real life football takes on him. What would you do if you were Chicago? Would you be moving on and take Caleb Williams, or would you try to get things right with the former first round pick, Justin Fields?
I think there's a lot of variables here, but I think it really breaks down to what they could actually acquire for the first overall pick. If they can get multiple round one picks, couple of round twos, maybe some assets, I think there's a real case to be made that maybe you stick with Justin Fields. But from a GM perspective, I think it makes the most sense to move on from Justin Fields. He's in the last year of his rookie contract. He's looking at a contract extension. You're going to have to pay more on the cap now, where you could move on from him and have another rookie contract for the next 4 to 5 years with Caleb Williams and build around him as the future. And then you could still get some assets back from trading Justin Fields, most likely another round one pick, potentially, multiple picks or some assets. So there's a lot of variables. I think if I'm the GM, I'd move on from Justin Fields. He's a much better fantasy quarterback than he is a real life quarterback. Has yet to eclipse 2,600 yards in passing in all 3 years. He's only eclipsed the 7 yards per attempt mark once in his 3 years. Has he not yet once hit 20 touchdowns? So it's clear and evident to me that he has struggled to adapt and to change to the speed of the NFL. The accuracy that we saw in college just has not transitioned to the NFL either. And so to your point, Theo, a lot of quarterbacks do elevate the playmakers around them. Justin Fields relies on the playmakers around him to elevate his play. And I don't think that that's something that the Bears want to hitch to for their future, especially with a new contract on the books. So I would move Justin Fields, draft Caleb Williams, and rely on the rookie contract and someone who's much more willing to push the ball down the field.
I think if there is a trade, it's easy. They're going to trade down to number 2. With the Commanders, and I think the Commanders would try to get Caleb Williams, who's a Washington, D.C. native, the only Heisman Trophy winner ever from Washington, D.C. It would be a great deal of goodwill for the fan base and an easy trade down where they could still get Marvin Harrison Jr. Guys, we're going to dive into these amazing matchups we have this weekend for the NFL playoffs. We're also going to hear John and Billy's thoughts on what the heck is going on over in Dallas. All the big disappointment, and now Mike McCarthy returning. Stick with us here at First Class Fantasy.
Hey, so many ask me, what's wrong with sports books? Why so many of them fail? The answer is simple. They don't innovate. They're just casino sports books on a phone. That's all they've been. There are a few that are doing a good job. We partner with them. Most of them, not so much. Until BetOpenly came along. BetOpenly said, hey, we're going to innovate. We're going to do something groundbreaking. We're going to have peer-to-peer betting in all states. And you pay 1%. When you win, you pay just 1% on your winnings. You heard that right. It's 1%. With code UNDERWORLD, you qualify for just that 1% transaction fee on BetOpenly. It gives you ultimate flexibility to set your own lines and browse lines that others have set. Think about it. That's what betting should be. And now that is the reality. BetOpenly.com. The code is UNDERWORLD. Check it out.
Welcome back to First Class Fantasy. Theo Greminger and Billy Muzio, joined by John Daigle. And John, before we talk about this week's playoff games, I think that the biggest surprise of last weekend was not necessarily Green Bay getting a win. That was surprising. But you had the Green Bay Packers going into Dallas and hanging 48 on the Dallas Cowboys. I predicted the Dallas Cowboys were going to win the Super Bowl in our player profiler predictions, Billy. So I didn't start out very well for me. And I was very surprised by Dallas's decision to bring back Mike McCarthy after this huge disappointment. John, your thoughts on the game and Dallas's decision to bring back McCarthy?
I could spend the next 2 hours talking about this game and this organization, because it wasn't just a loss. It was truly a humiliation. And now, like in the last four losses for Dak Prescott in the playoffs, the Cowboys haven't reached 7 points in the first half in any of them. They're just truly a disastrous organization that folds at whenever the stakes get higher. And not only that, but it was the worst case scenario and that all their backup plans failed too. I think, I don't even know if correct is the right word to use here, but I do think, as crazy as it sounds, it was the right move to stick with McCarthy, because I don't think you could have got better. I don't think Bill Belichick would have gotten better either, given that the best coach we've seen for the Cowboys in the last 30 years, Bill Parcells, who also drafted DeMarcus Ware, Jason Witten, shunned the Saints and told Jerry Jones they can't trade undrafted free agent Tony Romo whenever Sean Payton called about him. Like, even Bill Parcells left on his own accord because he couldn't make it work with Jerry Jones. It would be the same thing with Bill Belichick, who has to have GM control. It's never going to happen there. So given how good McCarthy has been in working with the Joneses' antics, I do think he's the right guy for the job. But in that game, Dan Quinn was supposed to be your backup coach, right? Fire McCarthy, go to Dan Quinn. I mean, Dan Quinn's schemes, you couldn't hire him after that game. You had to fire him immediately before he made it back to the locker room. I understand he couldn't change personnel because the Cowboys are undersized in general, but also it was Dan Quinn and the organization's choice not to sign any big linebacker whenever Leighton Vander Esch got injured mid-year. And that's why we saw the Packers lead every offense in the wild card round and 12 personnel, two tight end sets, and just average 8.5 yards per play, because they were running over little 190, 200-pound linebackers that weren't even supposed to be starting. Also, Micah Parsons, who has this Luka Doncic usage throughout the regular season, and you could argue now, maybe it's not caused correlation, but you could argue that the reason why these last 2 years in his career, he's been a no-show the last month of the season in the playoffs, is because he has an undersized every-down player at his position. And they're about to give him the most money for any defensive player in the entire history of the league. So honestly, everything from Dak, Micah, Dan Quinn, Mike McCarthy, it was literally all a no-win situation after that game. Mike McCarthy only has one more year left on his deal. I would think not only like, will he be on the shortest leash ever? I've already just been scheming and wrote down in my little football notebook to look at his first coach fired odds whenever they open up in the offseason, because I bet if the schedule works out and they're just get this murderer's row of teams in the first month of the year, it's possible that the leash is so short McCarthy doesn't even make it to like week 6 or 7, a lot like Wade Phillips the year they fired him after that Packers game in prime time. So I don't think you could have done better, honestly, and that's my view of the situation. It was no win no matter which way you went.
Billy Muzio, if you were Jerry Jones, besides having a really, really nice, private jet that you own yourself that you could, take out whenever, what would you have done with your football team, the Dallas Cowboys? Because, it sounds like John had a little like, yeah, I guess we'll keep McCarthy because we're not going to do better. Would you have just been angry enough to fire him the next day?
Yes, I think that. I think that you know what you have in McCarthy, and I think that it's limited. I mean, we saw what he squandered away in Green Bay. One would argue that they should have probably 3 more Super Bowls during the tenure of Aaron Rodgers and his peak while they were together, and I don't think that they were well coached enough to actually get there. I think that McCarthy is an above average coach. I think he has his weaknesses. I think he has his strengths. I do agree with Daigle, though. I think that the defense is and Quinn is what let the team down the most. I mean, why they're out there running zone in the beginning has made no sense to me. They should be running more man when it's worked most of the season. I understand there's mismatches and stuff, but they've had a lot more success with that. They could disguise packages more against Love. So I think there was a lot of opportunity on the defensive side that they squandered as well. But I do think that we have to look at it from two sides here. Of course, we can look at the negative of being blown away by Green Bay in the playoffs, but we do have to look at the positives they had. They did have a really good season overall. McCarthy took over the play calling, and Dak Prescott had a career year. We had CeeDee Lamb had a career year. So there's a lot of positives here as well that we need to look at. I am just a little bit more, I'm a high stakes player. I gamble more. And I think that it's in my, at least if I was the GM and the owner, I think I would take my chances and look at a high upside coach that is potentially going to transform this offense into the next elite consistent offense, because they had flashes of eliteness, but they weren't consistently elite in my opinion. And I think that they needed to upgrade the play calling and not rely on just the 1-2 punch between CeeDee Lamb and Dak Prescott week to week basis. And I think there's a lot more room to do so.
It doesn't change this offseason either, because Dak has them over the barrel, like $60 million cap hit they can't get away from, and a no trade clause. Like, good luck. Dak is just going to get paid again.
Yeah, it'll be a fun team to watch this offseason though, John, because I think, you know, you'll definitely see Dak back. CeeDee Lamb would be a top three pick for us in fantasy, but I think there could be some changes in the offense. I think they could draft another receiver. I think, you know, a younger player kind of in the Gallup role, that'd be an interesting one to watch. And then the running back position. Like we talked about Pollard in the pre-show. I think that was a little bit disappointing the way that he looked this year in his production. I think we could see a change there, whether it's in the draft or, you know, in with a kind of a deep free agent class, you know, a little sneak preview, little free agent class. Maybe a big name ends up in Dallas, maybe a Derrick Henry, just to change things up. And guys, you know, the team that it wasn't all disappointments, because Jordan Love and the Green Bay Packers, if you are a fan of this organization or somebody who has Jordan Love in Dynasty, or somebody who might have used Jordan Love in a playoff contest, you're walking around feeling like the smartest guy in the room right now. Jordan Love finished as quarterback 5 overall in the regular season for us in fantasy football, has a very efficient game, only 21 attempts, but he has 3 touchdown passes. And it continues to be, it doesn't matter who's available to him or who he's passing to, his 4 leading receivers in the playoff game were all first or second year players once again. Touchdown passes to Romeo Dubs, Luke Musgrave, and Dontavian Wicks. Your thoughts on Jordan Love and how impressive he has been, not only this season, but to the start to the playoffs. Billy?
Love was one of my sleeper picks for the quarterback. I just liked the offense and what they were doing in the offseason. He even surpassed my expectations of what he was, of what I projected him to do in the season. I never assumed that he was going to be quarterback 5 in fantasy points per game. I thought top 13, 12 was in the realm of possibilities, but if you would have, you know, put $1,000 on the table and said Jordan Love in or outside top 5, I would have taken outside 10 out of 10 times. That being said, the Green Bay Packers have shown they're very smart when it comes to quarterback play and quarterback selections. They, you know, I did not think that we were going to see this caliber of quarterback play coming from Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers, now to Jordan Love. But what they do is they sit there, they draft a player, they learn and they mentor the quarterback for years on end. I mean, we saw how long Aaron Rodgers sat behind Brett Favre, and now we saw how long Love sat behind Aaron Rodgers. They get to learn from them. They get to, you know, mimic them. They get to see their play style. They get to see what works, see what doesn't work. They get to get in the mindset of the successful quarterback. And they get to a point to where they're nearly frustrated. They're pissed off. They're angry. They want to prove to the world they still have it in them. And then they unleash them. And then this is why we have seen such successful quarterback play over the last, 2-3 decades now in Green Bay. And I think that it has been a system and a process that has worked that more teams need to mimic, because a lot of teams just throw a Justin Fields out there into the wild. It gets just pummeled. A lot of teams throw out a Mac Jones out into the wild. It just gets, you know, destroyed. The confidence gets wrecked and et cetera. So I think that Jordan Love has a bright future. I think they're going to continue to build around him. They're going to continue to build the line, continue to build the defense, allow him to become, you know, not necessarily have to make big plays, right? They can be able to control the game script. And I think that the Green Bay Packers are just a smart organization, and I think we're going to continue to see it.
John, anything to add on Jordan Love and his level of play right now?
I'll be interested to see how he grows, because he's on one of the greatest heaters, Joe Flacco, like during the Ravens Super Bowl run of all time. It's been a tale of two seasons. The first nine games he played with a lot of different injuries and understanding the offense. They also adjusted a lot of things over the second half of the season, but the first nine games, 6.7 yards per attempt, 14 touchdowns and 10 picks. Now his last nine games, the wild card included, 9 yards per attempt, 21 touchdowns, one pick. Again, he's just been on the heater of all heaters. He flashes consistently on tape with some big time throws. We talked about earlier when pockets break down, what happens with Tua, with Jared Goff. I mean, Jordan Love, with the pocket breaks down, he almost thrives from it. We saw even this past week, back foot throw for a big first down. He had the one he weaved in between two defenders for Romeo Doubs inside the 10-yard line. That was a Patrick Mahomes throw. It was crazy. So I'm just excited to see where he grows, because literally he's not the same quarterback he was in the first half of the year. And that's for a lot of different reasons that the entire organization can take some credit for.
Well, let's stay with San Francisco and Green Bay here. And John, you know, you and Billy just talked, you know, poetically about Jordan Love, and I'm a big Jordan Love fan, but guys, 9-8 team, they win a big game in Dallas, and now Vegas is kind of telling you what they think of Green Bay. They're going into San Francisco this week against Billy's 49ers, and they're catching 9.5. Very high total in this game. Vegas is expecting some points. This is a healthy 50-point or so total. John, what are you looking for in this game? What do you think will happen? And who is the fantasy player that we should be keeping an eye on?
All credit to Sharp Footballs and our good friend, Rich Rebar, who I did a show with him last night, and he mentioned this stat that stood out. And that is, because I was yelling about the Rams offense and how they average 6.7 yards per play with their big four, Kyren, Puka, Cooper, and Stafford on the field together this year. With the 49ers' big five, Kittle, Debo, Ayuk, Purdy, and McCaffrey on the field together this year, they averaged 7.6 yards per play. They just literally destroyed everyone in their sight. And then you look at this Packers schedule, although Joe Barry has teetered some things, he's altered some plays to put quarterbacks in weaker situations over this last stretch. But the last 3 weeks now, Nick Mullins, Jaren Hall, Justin Fields, playoff Dak Prescott, which is not regular season Dak Prescott, those quarterbacks in particular, when they were under pressure, 5.5 yards per attempt, 26th in EPA per play. They were just bad. And here comes Brock Purdy, who finished the year third in yards per attempt under pressure, 11 touchdowns, which also finished third in the league. He's an entirely different quarterback with everyone, Trent Williams included, at full strength. So although Jordan Love could prosper here, although I don't know who it's going to go to, I still think it's the 49ers in a big win, because I don't know how the Green Bay defense has any answers.
Billy, your thoughts on your 49ers?
Little biased here, but I'm going to try to keep it unbiased.
Look over Billy's shoulder if you're watching on the YouTube stream. He has a montage of famous 49ers. It's
here we go. Ready? I mean, that's – you can't – like, yeah, that's horrible. I guess you can't even see it. But, it's like a 14-by-8-foot painting on canvas on the wall. It's pretty awesome. But the there's two things here that are going to stick out to me. It's going to be a battle in the trenches, because Green Bay has got a pretty damn good offensive line. Let's say it. But the Niners front is probably the scariest in the NFL. And two things that really stick out to me is Jordan Love struggles when he is pressured. So if we can get pressure on the quarterback, I think that Love is going to kind of turn back into a pumpkin this week, per se, and probably have a bit of a struggle. And we're probably going to see, I don't think they'll actually meet that 9.5, because when we look at his pressure completion percentage, it was 49.4%. He was quarterback 30 in the league. And look at catchable passes when pressured, it was only 48%, which was quarterback 22 in the league. I do think that he's going to struggle against this front. And so the secondary of the Niners is very beatable. I was hoping they were going to make a move for a cornerback or a safety inside of free agency. Never happened. And they just continue to add to the front with Chase Young. So they rely on getting pressure to the quarterback. In particular, the game that sticks at the most when you don't get pressure is where they get beaten. Think back Minnesota, when Minnesota just diced up the Niners when Kirk Cousins was still healthy. And it's because they couldn't get to him. They couldn't rush him. They couldn't pressure him. And he was just able to sit back and pick apart the secondary. And so that's what it's going to take to beat the Niners. They're going to need to protect Jordan Love. They're going to need to give him a lot of time to throw. And they're going to need to come to Diggle's point, have answers on defense. So I think that it's uphill sledding. It's going to be very tough for them to do. I think the Niners win by more than 10, and I would definitely, think they're going to cover here.
I lean with Billy. I think it's a buzzsaw that Green Bay is stepping into. And I simply look at, like, the play for me that kind of flipped the Green Bay-Dallas game was that Jair Alexander pick. I think Brock Purdy and the 49ers, especially coming off of a bye, are going to be very tight with the football, very efficient on offense, not shoot themselves in the foot, and it's going to eventually kind of get away from it. And I think, like Billy said, double digits. Who's a player Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, John.
Dak Prescott doesn't make that throw, the Jair Alexander pick, in the regular season. CeeDee Lamb, if you watch the tape, CeeDee Lamb was running wide open on a post route. In the regular season, he hits him in the boundary. In the playoffs, though, he just cratered, man. He thought he took the safer throw and didn't see it over the middle. And everyone forgets that he had the third drop pick before Jake Ferguson's first touchdown in the end zone, too. Man, what a disaster.
There's some pain there, John. There's some pain in your voice here with this.
I've been doing this job so long that I'm removed from all emotions. Obviously, I grew up in Fort Worth, Texas, so like I grew up as a big fan. It's just so funny though, because I still do listen to sports radio to stay in like touch with Dallas and all the events going on. And it's gonna be the same shit next year. It's gonna be the same. Is Dak Prescott elite? Is Mike McCarthy a good coach? Should we pay CeeDee Lamb? Is Micah Parsons like the next best defender in the league? They're just gonna copy and paste the topics because this was supposed to be the team and they got railroaded. 48-32, it does not do it justice how bad that team was. I can't believe it. I'm still just so much in shock.
And I'll say this, keep an eye on George Kittle. After the success of Jake Ferguson, this feels like it could be a Kittle game to me. 3 touchdown catches for Ferguson, 10 catches overall. Very impressive for him. But these kind of games, George Kittle at home, if I'm in a secondary playoff contest, I'm circling George Kittle.
Well, let's also be reminded that Green Bay is a Swiss cheese defense against the run as well. And so I think you're going to see, you know, the typical heavy usage of Christian McCaffrey. But to your point, Theo, they may lean on Kittle more as they continue to. I know he's off the injury report, but that calf was popped up multiple weeks ago, and they have Super Bowl ambitions, so they could tend to kind of stray away from McCaffrey a little bit more than we would expect, but still be very efficient.
So let's flip over to the AFC, another Saturday game, and I think it was Jeff Bell of Football Guys. I think it was Jeff. I like following Jeff on Twitter. Jeff said that this is the last Saturday with football that we have until like college football and it starts up. So that was a little depressing to see, but this is our last Saturday, guys. So we get a really, really fun game here. You have the Houston Texans with CJ Stroud, unbelievable performance at home. That Houston Texans defense stepped up, back-to-back pick sixes on Joe Flacco. And CJ Stroud is just the truth. The kid is unbelievable. You know, playing wise beyond his years. Houston continues to perform with D'Amico Ryans, his first year as head coach, but now is a real test. They're going into Baltimore against the Baltimore Ravens, coming off of a bye as the AFC's number one seed. And it's almost a carbon copy point spread that we see in the Green Bay San Francisco game. It's about 9.5, 10 points. Vegas is telling you this is a big Baltimore win. John Daigle, are you seeing it that way?
I am seeing it that way. Usually it happens this time of the year too. Although CJ Stroud, we all know, is completely different than the other quarterbacks we've seen thrown in this spot. The most recent example would be Daniel Jones, took care of business against the Vikings, went into Philadelphia the next week last year, and just got throttled, as we all expected. CJ Stroud, like, the Texans had a league best only 14 turnovers this year. His 5 picks only came in 3 games. But to me, it's still about what this defense was before running into Gardner Minshew and a 38-year-old who didn't have a job until December, which is also why I had the Texans defense in so many playoff contests. Because before then, their secondary was still an absolute mess. 30th in yards per attempt allowed, 27th in rate of plays to gain 15 yards through the air. And the last time, even, you talk about their defense, we saw them at full strength in their last 2 games. That was when Brock Purdy was playing in an MVP game against Lamar, and they had Brock Purdy benched in the 3rd quarter with 4 picks. And then, of course, they throttled the Dolphins by 30-plus points in the next game before they were all just rested in Week 18. So, to me, I do lean Baltimore. They're a true juggernaut, and it's a great spot because it's still rookie CJ Stroud on the road against what is rightfully the number one team in the AFC.
It feels like that Detroit game a little bit, where Detroit came into Baltimore and we thought it was going to be a ball game, and it was just a beatdown. Billy, it's also the lowest total on the board. It's not like an ugly low. It's 43.5. But do you see this being maybe a letdown for fantasy football? How do you see this game playing out?
Yeah, I agree with Dinkle here. I think it's a couple things. When you were filling out your FFPC playoff lineups, how disgusting was it to try to pick between the other ancillary pieces outside of Lamar Jackson? Like, you didn't feel comfortable picking Zay. You didn't feel comfortable picking Andrews. You didn't feel comfortable picking Likely. Like, there was no comfort level here. So, like, we're rolling with the defense, we're rolling with the kicker at times, and we're rolling with the quarterback. And that was, like, the only things I felt comfortable with. And I think that that's all we can say from not only a fantasy perspective, but from we look at the team, I think that's going to translate to the field as well. We don't know where the targets are going to go any given week. We don't know how this offense is going to look any given week. Outside, we know that Lamar is going to be successful, and we know that he's going to be, you know, a game maker. But I think that we're going to see a defensive matchup between both sides of the ball, and I agree with the Vegas total. So I am not comfortable with anyone on the fantasy side outside of Lamar, and I think that this game is going to be a letdown for fantasy.
I like three players, all four different reasons, a variety of them. Let's start with Nico Collins, because I wouldn't even call it a good matchup, but usage-wise, I don't know how you get away from him, because now he's played five games without Tank Dell. He's been targeted on 35% of his routes, 46% of the team's air yards in those games as well. Like Amon-Ra St. Brown, anytime someone asks me about Nico Collins, I just tell them to look at his box score over the last month. That's really all you need to see, because all he's doing is destroying. Plus how Bobby Slowick is scheming him up open in a number of different locations on the field. So Nico Collins usage-wise, not usage-wise, but I think it's a sneaky spot. I mean, if they weren't waiting for a three-week rest window to unleash Odell Beckham, when the hell is he ever going to play as a full-down role? He's now had the last 21 days off since he also took off week 18. So I like Odell Beckham in this game against this bad Texans secondary as well. And then I don't think, like you said, Billy, I don't think the targets are really going to be there, but the Texans have given up explosive plays to tight ends and Likely isn't seeing the targets, but he's so good at football that he's turning them into big plays. So the fact that the Texans are also allowing out of their bye in this time, 9.5 yards per catch to opposing tight ends, I think it could still be a like three catch, but explosive day for Isaiah Likely. So I like him too sneakily.
Yeah, I think it's a Baltimore game. I love C.J. Stroud, and I think there'll be a lot of goodwill for C.J. Stroud and the Houston Texans this offseason. A tremendous amount of cap space for that team and such a young, strong core on both sides of the ball. But this is like the wake-up call game. This is Baltimore, easy, move on. Baltimore Ravens are going to be hosting the AFC title game. Now, we have a really fun game, guys, on Sunday for the NFC. You have the Detroit Lions hosting the LA Rams. The Lions are a little less than a touchdown favorite, and this is going to be like the most lit environment, I think, of the entire weekend. The Detroit Lions won their first playoff game in like 30-plus years this past week. But I think the story of the game for me, guys, and John, you can kind of wax poetic on this, it's Baker Mayfield versus Jared Goff. If I told you guys in 2021 that we'd be talking 2 years from now an NFC playoff game in week two with Jared Goff against Baker Mayfield, you guys would have said I'm crazy. But it's sort of like an unbelievable moment for both of these quarterbacks. John, your thoughts on the game and the quarterbacks?
For Todd Bowles to be one of the last eight coaches too. Yeah, it's a major deal. I know they had the perfect draw in getting an Eagles team that from the first play, man, no one wanted to be there. You could tell they were so checked out for this last 2 months of the season. But it's another great matchup, honestly, for Baker. So in this first matchup, all the way back in week six, if people don't remember, like the Bucs came out of their bye and the Lions dared him to beat them shallow, to not take deep plays, because all they did was play zone on 85% of their snaps, and they're not really a zone defense the rest of the year. They led that week in usage of two high safeties over the top, and they only blitzed him on 10 dropbacks, 23% of his dropbacks all game. And it did work. He was terrible. Completed 51% of his passes, 206 yards and a pick. But from that time on, I don't know if it was adjustments he made to two high safeties. I don't know if it was Dave Canales who saw it for the first time and then said, okay, with Baker, we need to do it this way. He's actually since then led the entire league in touchdowns against zone coverage, and no one has recorded more fantasy passing points against zone since week 7 as well. And that's just assuming the Lions play him that same way since it worked the first time. Even if they don't, I'm not sure it matters because, like, just look at what the Rams did. I know everyone sees the score, but the Rams averaged 7.5 yards per play. They recorded 10 passes of 15-plus yards. They only lost because their 3 red zone possessions finished with 9 points because Sean McVay's a coward, as he's always been. And whereas the Lions' 3 red zone possessions ended with 21 points. That was literally the difference of the game. The Lions' defense didn't do a single thing to help out. So I think it's a massive day for the guys that can get over the top. Like, Mike Evans and David Moore, for instance, who ran more routes than Trey Palmer for the first time all year last week. And then you mentioned on the other side of the ball, yes, the Lions also won't be stopped because we've talked about it throughout the show, but Jared Goff, when he's not disrupted, he is an amazing quarterback. And they tried to blitz him in week 6. He was blitzed on 42% of his dropbacks. And what happened is not only did he average 9 yards per attempt, threw for 2 touchdowns against the blitz, but also only Brock Purdy has more touchdowns against the blitz this year. And so assuming that this Bucs team that has created only the fourth lowest pressure rate out of their bye, which is a 10-game stretch now from week 7 on, I just think both sides are going to have immense success through the air here because you also can't run on either team as well.
Who wins, John?
Lions win. I already bet on Monday. I bet the Lions -5.5. I may buy some back, though. This is what happened with the Browns. Like, I do my work, and then I make the initial bet to get the best line. But after my initial work, I said, oh, shit. And I went back, and I bet the Texans money line because I realized, like, I was wrong. I think I'm coming around to the idea the Bucs covered this game because the Lions defense is so bad.
Billy, where are you at on this one?
I think the Lions win. I like Diggle's hitting on all the points. I don't need to elaborate.
I'm sorry.
On the stats. No, it's great. I love it because I can sit back and just say ditto, right? And then we can move on. You have to look at the energy that right now. So Daigle's going to speak more about the analytics, and I'm going to speak more about the human element. Everyone knows that I really like the human element side of football as well. And you look at what Campbell has created inside Detroit and the energy that they have now and what they're playing with. And energy is hard to stop when it comes to playoffs. Like any sport you talk about, baseball, football, basketball, you look at like what the Giants did making in to the World Series off a wild card, and they get that momentum. And I know that the Lions weren't a wild card, but they have that momentum right now. They have the energy. They have the drive. They have the first home playoff win in like 30 years. They get another playoff game at home now here in Detroit. They only have to wait a week in between now. There is a lot of energy in Detroit right now, and it's going to be hard to stop that. As good as the Bucs have been, I mean, let's face it, they have made some great plays, but all around – I think Detroit's just the better team, and they're going to have to rely on some big plays. They're going to have to rely on some big playmakers inside of Tampa. And I just think that Detroit is able to kind of spread the ball around a little bit more. They're able to play off of multiple players. They can attack the game from multiple angles. And again, that energy is going to be hard to stop. So I like Detroit here. And I think they're the clear winner.
Last week with the Rams covered, since they were 3-point dogs. Again, I do think the Lions win with you, Billy, because of that getting by, but 6 points may be too much given the defense.
So I just think back
to money line.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. You lay that. Yeah. Billy and John both want you to go lay like -265 everyone on the record.
Over regardless. Have to be over. That's the easiest part here.
I just look back with this Tampa Bay team. I think people are kind of looking at the Philadelphia game because of a little bit of recency bias. They were playing sort of a broken team. But if you go back and look at the Carolina game, you go back and look at the New Orleans game, this Bucs team is just not that good. And I think Detroit's on a collision course with San Francisco in the NFC. John, take that one.
I agree with you, but also remember, Baker was dealing with the ankle in week 17 and the rib injuries against the Panthers in week 18. The Panthers outplayed them. The Panthers should have knocked them out of the playoffs that game, but they had so many costly turnovers between the red zone interception, G.J. Chark's fumble at the goal line whenever he dove for the pylon, that the Bucs squeaked it out. But last week, remember, Baker had the extra 24 hours to turn that rib injury around because they played on Monday night, and he was sensational. It probably was Matt Patricia and the Eagles defense, but he also led the entire wild card round, Jordan Love, everyone included, in yards per attempt under pressure. And now on Wednesday, that's the first full practice he's gotten since week 17 before he suffered that injury. He's going to be full all week long, presumably, unless he has a setback. So I think he's pretty healthy for this game.
Yeah, I'm excited for this one, though. This is just, it's very cool to see Detroit, and I also think Detroit-San Francisco would be a fun game as well. Guys, but we got to finish out the discussion here with the game that seems to happen every single year now, and that's Buffalo-Kansas City. And right now you have a very tight line. It's a 2.5-point spread. Vegas is saying this is going to be the best game of the weekend, and the total's at like 45.5. Where are you at on this one, John? I'm trying to influence your decision here because I have Josh Allen on the thumbnail for our show here. It says Super Bowl bound. So I'm pretty much on the Bills and Josh Allen destiny right now. Yeah. Where are you seeing the way this game goes?
I got all my lots of friends in Buffalo as well. I know a lot of people in Buffalo listen, like my big running team that I do with Mike Leone and a handful of others are literally like based out of Buffalo. We travel together and run these big events. Our next one's at the end of April. But unfortunately, I have to go to the other side of y'all because I think the Chiefs win this one outright. And it's really because I don't want to mess with this Chiefs defense right now. We've now seen 8 games where Chris Jones, Nick Bolton, and L'Jarius Sneed were all in the lineup. Chris Jones missed week 1 against the Lions. Remember, we were all in Las Vegas together watching that one on the projector. L'Jarius Sneed was in and out the second half of the season, and Nick Bolton suffered a midseason injury. He returned. This first matchup in week 14 was actually his first game back. But they played some very good quarterbacks in good spots in those 8 games, whether it was early season Trevor Lawrence in week 2, Justin Herbert had both Josh Palmer and Keenan Allen available in that game. Again, Allen in week 14, and the Chiefs defense has been absolutely incredible, not one to mess with. Literally leading the league, 4.2 yards per play, second in EPA per play, even 6th in pressure rate. 30% success rate, which is 3rd as well. It's just not a unit you can mess with. They're number 1 in DVOA against opposing wide receiver 1. So not that Stephon Diggs has been getting there anyways, but I would imagine it's a game we bet is under props because I think it's going to be tough sledding. Even Tyreek Hill, who was like a dark horse MVP candidate midway through the year, had that tweet. I don't know if y'all saw, but he said that L'Jarius Sneed's stats were shown on Twitter, and Tyreek Hill quote tweeted saying that he quote jammed him to Cancun. And that's Tyreek Hill, who like dropped his ego.
I love
said,
that. I saw that. I
said,
did
like,
see
dude,
that
this guy's a bull. Like, you can't mess with him one-on-one. So it's just not a situation where I want to mess with the Chiefs. And we are going to be watching the Bills injury report throughout the week because Matt Milano has been their best coverage linebacker. He's been out the second half of the season. And those duties have fallen to, in order, Tyrell Dodson and Terrell Bernard. And both those guys are injured now. If those guys can't go, I would imagine Travis Kelce yet again has another major day because that's what happened against Miami. Jerome Baker, all of their injuries, but Jerome Baker had been their best coverage linebacker. And the Chiefs just sandwiched him with 10 targets, including 5 on screens, kept them shallow, told them to just push up field. So I bet it's a big Travis Kelce target day too if those middle linebackers are out.
Shout out to the chat right now. Make sure you're subscribed to Player Profiler YouTube and smash the like button. Billy, are you going with my Buffalo Bills or John Daigle's Kansas City Chiefs?
Real quick, I wasn't quick enough on the draw when he said who he was rooting for. Can you just say it one more time for me so I can click a button over here, Daigle? Who did you pick for the game?
I have the Chiefs money line.
I'm going with the Bills as well. The Chiefs just don't look good to me. Defensive wise, yes. Offensively, they've been dysfunctional all year. I think Rice has kind of came up big and has definitely developed. Kelce, let's face it, has had his first season under 1,000 yards, has not been great. And then you have the home field advantage as well. So Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes, that was a fun stat. I forgot where I saw it this last week, was that Patrick Mahomes has never played away game in playoffs in his 15 playoff appearances outside of the Super Bowl. And so this is his first time he's been playing away from home inside of a playoff matchup. And so I think that's also a psychology piece we have to look at on top of the dysfunction of the offense that we've seen. So Bills have been hot. I think that, we definitely have seen
Diggs, I don't want to say collapse, but he's definitely kind of fallen off a cliff here from a production standpoint. But and I don't think this week is going to be a rebound week. But the overall, the Bills, I think that Josh Allen and has been good. They are hungry to win. We've seen the letdowns they've had in the past years in playoffs. I think that they're, you know, in a position now to leverage all this hate and energy and put it to Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. And I just don't think that they have the offense to get it done this year.
Well, Billy, we will touch on this next week, me and you, on our, you know, further playoff picks. But John, while we got you here, let's go ahead. Based on your picks today, who wins Baltimore, Kansas City, and who wins Detroit, San Francisco to meet in the Daigle Super Bowl?
Definitely 49ers come out of the NFC for me. I think the run out is too good for them. The Chiefs-Ravens game, I'm already thinking about it. I have no idea. The Ravens are not only like, if you look
at... You mean the Buffalo Bills and Ravens game, right?
Okay, sure. Whatever it is, the Ravens are just... It's not just great for this year on both sides of the ball. It's literally historically great. I believe Aaron Schatz at FTN Fantasy had them finishing with the third best DVOA of the last decade. Like, they're just a unit. And we haven't even seen Lamar Jackson really play. Like, everyone knows in fantasy he struggled, but it wasn't because he struggled. It was because the defense was so good, they didn't need him to get there, and they scaled him back and just ran the ball with Gus Edwards instead. Man, I'll say, gosh, the Ravens 49ers is so much chalk, though. I'll say Ravens 49ers with Ravens winning, but gosh, if it's the Chiefs, like I'm expecting, not anyone else, I don't know. I really don't know.
Well, Billy, we're going to keep a little gas in the tank for next week on First Class Fantasy. Billy Muzio will reveal his Super Bowl winner. You know, let's hopefully we're going to see a
real quick. It's already been, they've already announced it. They announced it week 18 for the last 3 years. We've heard about this conspiracy.
It's the Muzio-led conspiracy here now. Yes, I have heard from you, Billy. Go ahead and share with John.
Dang, have you heard about this?
I have not, no.
It's the logo colors they release in week 18 for the Super Bowl. And for the past three seasons, we have seen the logo of the Super Bowl teams. So we had Bengals versus the Rams. We had Eagles versus Kansas City. And now we have SF versus Baltimore. Of course, now the colors, looks like my Niners are going to lose the Super Bowl. But this has been a three-year trend, and it has been pretty consistent.
Which is would also make it two consecutive Super Bowls of number one seeds going, and why they should never have extended the playoffs for more money, because the participation trophy teams make it.
Love it. Guys, we're going to attempt to rip through here. I love hearing the long answers, but we don't want the show to go too long. So okay, Let's rip through this one. NFL MVP, is it even worth discussing? Lamar Jackson is minus 10,000. John Diggle, is he your MVP?
Yes, personally. Everyone else lost it throughout the year. Tyreek Hill, Dak Prescott, Christian McCaffrey, even Josh Allen. James Cook was the better player over the second half of the season. Like, everyone else didn't live up to their part of it. Lamar did.
Lamar's my MVP as well. Billy, make a case for your guy Purdy if you have to.
I'm actually going to make a case for Christian McCaffrey. We've seen a dual MVP a couple times in the NFL where a running back split it with a quarterback. I think it could be another instance this year where we see McCaffrey and Lamar Jackson dual or co-MVP.
We'll keep this one for fantasy related, and as much respect to DeMar Hamlin, who's probably going to win this award in real life. Let's go fantasy football comeback player of the year. Joe Flacco or Baker Mayfield?
Joe Flacco.
Give me Baker, guys. Give me Baker. Baker was Baker quarterback two teams last year. Carolina, you know, he had the stint in LA where he came off the plane and started. He quarterbacked Carolina.
Man, Joe Flacco came off the couch and just started dicing teams up, though.
Joe Flacco basically was just a walking QB1 till he made the postseason. So, like, he saved a lot of people because that's when every quarterback was injured. They had to pick someone up. So I would have to give it to Joe Flacco for both comeback player of the year, like in the NFL and fantasy.
Yeah, it's probably going to be Flacco. It's one of the greatest storylines ever with Flacco. I just think it's like the Baker Mayfield redemption song season is very, very, very cool. Guys, let's stay offensive player of the year. Christian McCaffrey is favored in Vegas. Tyreek Hill is up there. CeeDee Lamb, like 20-1, third in the running. John, who is your offensive player of the year? Is it as easy as McCaffrey?
it's as easy as McCaffrey. Billy even made the argument for MVP. To me, it's a quarterback award. It goes, so offense player of the year goes to McCaffrey. I know everyone tries to squeeze Tyreek Hill in there. Tyreek Hill was out, and Jalen Waddle and the Dolphins put 30 on an elite jet secondary. Tyreek Hill, like, doesn't matter in the grand scheme of awards. I'm sorry, Tyreek, because it was an amazing season.
It's CMC. Billy, we can move on.
CMC.
Okay, how about defensive player of the year? Right now, it's Myles Garrett is the favorite, Micah Parsons, and then number three is TJ Watt. Who was the most impactful defensive player this season? Let's go with John.
Dark horse. I'm going to say Max Crosby because whenever Antonio Pierce took over, the Raiders literally finished as the number one defense in fantasy. They were an entirely different team under Antonio Pierce, who I do think deserves not that even – I honestly, it sucks to say. I don't think he'll have success so much because we've seen the hard-nosed coach thing run its course over many seasons. But he definitely deserves the job.
Yeah, I agree. Deserves the job. I'll go with Myles Garrett. I think he's the favorite for a reason. Unbelievable, and that defense was so impactful. Billy, which way are you going here?
Yeah, I think Myles Garrett probably wins, but I think you can make a real argument for TJ Watt. I think he deserves it.
Okay, offensive rookie of the year. CJ Stroud is the favorite. But Puka Nacua is about 4-1 right now. Sam Laporta and Jahmyr Gibbs both in there, but it's infinite odds. It's going to come down to Stroud, most likely. Make a case for Puka if you'd like. I'm going to go with CJ Stroud. What a season by him. Houston was like moribund last year, and now they've won a playoff game as well. Give me CJ Stroud as the offensive rookie of the year. John, want to go elsewhere with this or staying with Stroud?
They got to split it. They have to split it. Steve Mayer and Peyton Manning split the MVP award. I think it was in 2004. You have to split it between Puka and Stroud. Both deserve it.
Billy.
Ooh, I like the split call because that allows me to just not pick one because I want to pick them both. I think that both deserve it. Stroud, what he did, is amazing. But if I can only pick one, I'm going to say Puka. You break every single rookie record that's been there for, you know, three decades. I think you have to go Puka.
Okay, and here's an interesting one, defensive rookie of the year, because Jalen Carter, I think, was, and I know we're not supposed to look at, like, the playoffs, but Jalen Carter was supposed to win it. He's the favorite still.
I like
Will Anderson is just incredible. I'm going to say Will Anderson is going to win this, despite, you know, being number two in the odds right now. John, make a case for either, or if you want to throw another rookie out.
It's Will Anderson for me as well. That Colt, he was banged up throughout the year. That Colts game was a playoff game, and he showed up big in that one, including with just one sack, but led the team in pressure. So I think it's Will Anderson.
Billy, you're on Anderson?
Yeah, I couldn't even hold an excitement when you're talking about him. Will Anderson, I think he's – and people are going to take recent biases, and they're going to look at playoffs, even though they're not supposed to. They're going to.
100%. 100%. They do it in every sport too, guys. They don't read the rules. It's what you've done for me lately. NFL Coach of the Year. Right now, Stefanski is a pretty heavy favorite. For me personally, D'Amico Ryans is your Coach of the Year. And I'm surprised that the odds are not for Ryans at number one. For him to come in year one with a rookie quarterback and completely change like the whole culture of this team, have them win a playoff game and win their division. I mean, I think I was very impressed by him. Which way are you going, Daigle? And throw out any coach you'd want to have in the mix.
If it's the playoffs, it's D'Amico Ryans. If it's a regular season award, I still give it to Stefanski. It wasn't just going to his fourth quarterback and Joe Flacco that he had to navigate. The Browns in the playoff game were on their fourth offensive tackle. No Nick Chubb from the first month of the season. Defensive injuries all year long they had to water through. I think Kevin Stefanski did more than D'Amico Ryans with less.
And Billy, the disrespect for Kyle Shanahan. He's sitting there at 60-1 with the
too
number
many good
one
players.
Seed. Too many good yeah. players. Doesn't get, you know.
No, he doesn't even. I don't even think he should be in the conversation. I would have said Dan Campbell up until about 3 weeks ago, but I think he's just made too many bonehead moves and plays. But I think that he should at least be in the conversation. But I would have to say Stefanski as well.
It's the most just award. Remember, whenever Zach Taylor led the Bengals to the playoffs, Rich Bisaccia still finished ahead of him in Coach of the Year awards. Mike Vrabel won that year because it's always about what you do with the least. It's not about the best coach.
Rapid fire, guys. Rapid fire on this one. Which head coaching job are you keeping an eye on that you're most intrigued with? Which is the job that right now that's open? Let's start out with Billy on this one. that you're most interested in?
Man, there's two. There's Arizona.
Okay, go two. Go two.
There has to be two for me. So Atlanta, sure. Of course, because they have so many playmakers, and I think they're undercoached and super talented. So both on both sides of the ball. And then you have Seattle that has some great playmakers and also has just been coached like it's been 1920, and they've been underperforming, of course, based on the playmakers they have as well. But I think slightly Atlanta over Seattle, but I'm interested in both.
John.
Commanders. Drake May, most cap space in the entire league headed into the offseason, and hopefully exciting new head coach working with two amazing receivers in Dotson and McLaurin.
And a lot of draft picks too, John, based on the young and sweat trades. I'll go Billy, you know, what Billy said, both of those teams are good, but just to keep it different, how about the Chargers? You know, there's some rumors for Mike Vrabel there, but I think it's kind of a weird time for Justin Herbert dynasty managers where you'd like to see an offensively inclined head coach coaching hire there, and remains to be seen what goes on there. Okay, which free agent, impending free agent, are you most interested in that could have the biggest impact on fantasy football, Billy?
Oh, dude, I haven't even looked at free agents.
Okay, I'll go first. I'll go first. I'll do one here. Saquon, because Saquon's the guy.
Saquon tagged again.
Saquon is technically this past year was not tagged because that last minute negotiation they did with him, so it wasn't a franchise tag thing. So they can tag him, but there's a chance that he, you know, moves on and the Giants move on in their direction. And I think Saquon would be like the number two team in the odds to sign Saquon right now, besides the Giants, is that Houston Texans team. They're like plus 700. Or plus 600 to get Saquon Barkley. If that happens, he's a redraft rocket ship. John, is there any player in upcoming free agent that you are interested in discussing or most interested in monitoring?
To me, it is Mike Evans, because I do think he has one or two good seasons left, especially after the nuclear year he had. And so to go to a win now team and perhaps someone with a elevated quarterback like the Texans, for instance, who do need one more playmaker, even if it's a 1 year massive deal, I think Evans could land in a great spot.
I got one, Theo. I got one. I thought
Go for it.
It's going to be Kirk Cousins, because it could affect sure. The entire offense of the Vikings.
I love that one. Okay, guys. Real quick, where would you like to see Marvin Harrison end up? And let's say, you know, those teams that are drafting towards the top of the draft, don't go too far out there. Of course, we'd love to see like Patrick Mahomes and Marvin Harrison, but realistic Marvin Harrison landing spot where you'd like to see him end up. Billy, start out with you.
I want to see him end up in New England so fantasy can burn.
See, I had this conversation with somebody else, and I said, if New England passes up a quarterback here with their draft pick to select Marvin Harrison Jr. with a brand new coach, and we don't know who the offensive coordinator is going to be, then Marvin Harrison's going to have 165 targets as a rookie. So I don't hate anything. I can make a bull case for anything.
All joking aside, I mean, I think Twitter would explode. People would hate life if Marvin Harrison ended up in New England. But I think from a fantasy perspective, I would love to see him on the Chargers.
John, how about you?
I was going to say hopefully falling to five in the Chargers, although that looks like a Malik Nabers spot. My actual answer is anywhere but New England, Billy. Literally anywhere. Yeah,
exactly. I'll say the Arizona Cardinals. I think that would be a really, really fun one with Kyler, and we could paint ourselves a picture that they take a big leap, you know, in year two now there under Jonathan Gannon. John, this was a blast. Let everybody know what you have going on, I guess, on Twitter.
Yeah, you could follow me. You probably already do. But if you don't, at Najee Daigle. Again, there will be an announcement, I'm guessing, around the Super Bowl. Everything's awesome. Still getting hammered out, but I'll be around.
Awesome. Well, we're really excited to see what you have coming next, and I'm sure you're going to crush it no matter what you do. Billy, what do you have going on?
A lot of behind-the-scenes things coming for Roto-Rooter Role Player Profile. I can't speak to them yet, everybody, but just know that there is some big news coming in down the pipeline here in the coming months. I have been working tirelessly behind the scenes, getting together a product that everybody is going to love. We're talking about industry across the board. And so that's all I can tease now. But I'm very excited for what our team has built and the efforts that have been going into this thing. And I cannot wait to show the general public it.
Yeah, and I'll echo Billy's comments. We have some really cool stuff on coming out at Player Profiler. A lot of announcements this month on some cool content that we have. Shout out to my guy, Dan Williamson of the Goat District. He's going to be joining Player Profiler, writing and doing some podcasting for us. Dan, I hope you're listening. And check out, if you guys are into Dynasty, check out Dynasty Life. I'm dropping a weekly podcast now right here at Player Profiler. I had Clay from Dynasty Trades in Five on this week. It was a very good show. And stick with us here at First Class Fantasy. We're going to be having some great guests all throughout the offseason. Enjoy the NFL playoffs, everyone. This is what we've been waiting for. Have a great rest of your week.